Before we get to this episode, just to say thanks to everyone who's bought my new book, Champion Thinking, How to Find Success Without Losing Yourself. Published by Bloomsbury, the response has been terrific. It's an Amazon bestseller. It's been top 20 in the airport charts consistently, and the reviews have been terrific right across the board. And if you like this episode that you're about to hear on Flow, you'll be sure to enjoy Champion Thinking. Head to my website, simonmundy.com, or Amazon, Waterstone, Smith's, places like that, to get your copy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome back. This episode is an oldie but a goodie with the former Southampton manager Nigel Adkins, genuinely one of the nicest men in football and something of a social media sensation, certainly during the days of COVID. Nigel is full of positivity and I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Good afternoon, Simon. You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Trust you slept well.
I like it. Yeah, all sleeping well. It's important. The importance of sleep cannot be underestimated for all of us.
And recovery is becoming more and more appreciated, I think, isn't it? But the reason I said trust you slept well is because that's the opening line that you say whenever you upload one of your fantastic Breakfast with Nige videos on Twitter. And we're going to talk about your wonderful Breakfast with Nige videos. But first, a bit about you. You're best known, aren't you, for the incredible job you did as manager, taking Southampton up 51 places from the bottom of League One to the Premier League. Now, I've got a friend of mine called Steve, who's a Southampton fan. And obviously, I wanted to pick his brains about what he thought about you. If you were to have a guess and how he described you, have a stab now.
Just a positive, good guy.
Do you know what? You nailed it there. He said that he thinks you're probably the nicest man in football. Now, how about that? That's not a bad compliment, is it?
Well, it is a nice compliment, but I suppose sometimes you can be too nice, can't you? But I think it's good to be, I think if you just be a good person in life in general is a good starting point for all of us, isn't it? So thank you, Steve.
I'm sure he'll be delighted that you said that as well. And I did a bit of research around Saints fans on a few forums and stuff like that. And I found a poll which said that 87% of the club's fans said you were one of their greatest ever managers. And frankly, I don't know what was wrong with the other 13%. But clearly, you're an absolute smash hit at Southampton. A lot of Saints fans were really influenced by your approach to life. And it's been dubbed on a lot of forums as Adkinism. One guy wrote that after you left the job at Southampton, he said, "Since Nigel left the club, I've been trying to be less of a cynical smartass over the last year." So that's quite a nice impact that you're having.
Yeah, it is. And it's nice when you hear things like that because, as you say, you're just trying to be a good guy in life. And if you can just try and keep promoting the good things and the positive things that go on, because there's many great things that go on in life. Obviously, we're talking now about the lockdown period that we've gone through and the situation for everybody. It can be quite depressing. So if you can shine a bit of light on everything and put a smile on people's faces, I think that goes a long way.
And cynicism's quite an easy thing to slip into, don't you think?
Yes, I think it is. A lot of people talk about negativity and they always look at, is the glass half full or half empty? They'll always look at the wrong side of it. I suppose now where we've got social media, even more so people have got more of a voice to be damning of people or putting people down instead of looking at the good things that they go and do. Even like I've spoke to reporters over the years at football clubs that have been out and some of them are all yeah, we don't want to know about the good stuff. We want to know about the bad stuff. So it is easy to slip into it. I suppose if you look at the media as well, the news obviously highlights a lot of negative things. So percentage-wise, it's probably more negative instead of positive, and we need to redress that balance, really, I think.
Do you ration the amount of news you watch then?
I try and be sensible with it. Again, we all have a choice in life, don't we? We can choose what we want to go and do. And for me, you can switch the television on and watch the 6 o'clock news, or you can switch it off. You put the news on at 10 o'clock at night before you go to bed. It's not an ideal thing because you want to have a good sleep pattern before you go to bed. And you've all these negative thoughts, you're getting drip fed with all these negative thoughts. And again, we touch on social media. Everyone's got the handheld device now that constantly touching it. You know, we have that dopamine release looking for a good thing, but we're getting fed so much negative news. We don't know if it's true half the time, and it can become very depressing. We have a choice. We have a choice to pick the phone up and look at it. We have a choice to switch the television on or not. And for me, it's trying to put yourself in, this is the kind of world I want to go and live in. Surround yourself with good people, and people who are going to have a smile on your face. You know, it's relationships are so important for all of us.
We're social beings, aren't we? And the oxytocin flows when we connect. And you mentioned dopamine. And I know dopamine gets released with even bad news because it relates to our need for survival. And as well, social media feeds are set up in such a way as to exploit that love of dopamine. Do you ever disappear down the scrolling through social media feeds rabbit hole?
Do a scroll down. I follow several people and teams and educate myself from that point of view. And I choose to follow these people. So I'm putting myself in that situation where what they put up is what I want to go and see. See the notifications that you get. I've found it a nice way at this moment in time to interact. And even when I've been at football clubs, for example, the latter football club, Hull City, to interact with the supporters at that moment in time is a good thing. And like now, as I say, just having that relationship is important, just to interact and maybe just you touch it there, a good morning. Or Richard, for example, has just completed his best ever 5K, a couch to 5K. Just a good morning, well done, keep it all going. He's now become very inspirational down in the Southampton area, where other people who follow him now are, well, if Richard can do it, I can do it. Or Nikki, who's up in Scotland, she's gone and lost a stone and a half. Fantastic, you know? But again, routines, attitudes, behaviours, exercise, nutrition, sleep, all the things that you go with it, all of a sudden, it just small little steps help. And so have I disappeared down the rabbit hole of social media and the feeds? I choose not to follow all the negative stuff. However, your phone gets picked up now. And what I've noticed over the last several weeks is things that I don't want to go and follow are getting advertised on the link. So I'm thinking, what's going on here? I've got to find out more about that.
You're clearly very conscious about what you put in your body, whether that be in terms of your nutrition, but also, you know, what you are consuming, say, on social media. And I think with something like social media, you have a choice of spreading a bit of negativity or positivity. And at this moment in time, it feels like negativity tends to get a bit more traction. But I think your videos in particular, I mean, there was a Guardian article that said about how you were providing a source of calm in unsettling times. You know, your videos in particular show that actually, you know, there is an appetite for the more upbeat, the more positive stuff, and that can ripple outwards as well. And actually, I dug out a quote when you just were joining social media, and it said, you said, "We have to understand that everybody's on social media now. I'm not the sort of person who will bury their head in the sand and not understand why people do things. I really don't know how it will pan out." And here you are now with these videos that are really having a great impact. So you've gone from just trying to understand it to having a real positive effect. And that to me is quite a sign of your outlook. And, you know, I wanted to talk to you a bit about growth mindset, because you love a quote, which is perfect because I'm very much cut from the same cloth in that regard. And one of my favorite quotes of yours, you said, "The biggest room in my house is the room for improvement."
Yeah, I was at Sheffield United at the time, and one of the reporters, because obviously it was a challenging period, and we were getting through it, but it needed a lot more time. But again, yeah, I was one of the reporters, it would have been BBC Radio Sheffield, And he's asking obviously loads of different questions. And obviously, I think we must have lost the game at the weekend. And I must have turned around. He must have said, "Well, what have you got to go and do?" So, well, there's an improvement needs to be done. So I just come up with that. I just said it at the time. So whatever that quote was there. So,
yeah. I mean, that is about having a growth mindset, isn't it? And you are a person who really, to me, personifies it. So if you had to sum up what a growth mindset was, how would you do that?
Oh, I suppose it's not being limited by your talent or the ability you've got at the moment, but to go and seek challenges. You know, we're surrounded with opportunities all the time. You want to improve, but the only way you're going to improve, you've got to put the effort in. You've got to put the hours in. You're going to get knocked down. You've got to pick yourself up. You've got to have that resilience. You've got to keep going. We talk about trying to master something. You know, that comes with effort. You know, just, you know, you see so many people have got so much talent. I've always used the phrase, hard work beats talent, and talent doesn't work hard. None of us are perfect. One of the biggest things I've learned over life is that we're all unique. We're all totally, totally different. And as long as we can understand that none of us are the perfect article and all of us can strive to keep improving, look for new challenges, accept criticism along the way, embrace that you've got weaknesses, you want to go and improve, well, go and work at trying to improve on them. You know, always learning. I always use the phrase, always learning. Whatever situation we're put in, we're always learning from it. You know, I do debriefs in games of football, lessons learned. You know, and we want that interaction with everybody to, you know, not be fearful of being in a situation where you can say, right, I've learned something from a defeat. You know, failure, everyone worries about failure. Well, failure is an opportunity to learn. Mm. And then you build that resilience of, okay, I might have failed, but the resilience to keep going again, which is important.
To me, there are some really obvious areas where you can have a growth mindset. For example, you know, you can go to the driving range, get some golf lessons, improve your golf swing. You can practice penalties. You can get on the piano and improve in that way. But as well, for me, things like emotional intelligence. So, for example, communication, how good you are at listening, your ability to develop emotional control. And I'm wondering to what degree you think perhaps people resist having a growth mindset in those areas. Because I think perhaps there's an attitude that, you know, you get to a certain age and this is just the way I am. But you're talking about, no, life's about always, always learning in every area.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing you just said there, being able to listen. It's something I've had to work on in respect of some, we'll have a conversation and I'm looking to jump in straight away and start talking about what I think and this and that. And it's an art to be able to just sit and listen and give somebody time to say their piece, be present with them, listen to what they're saying, take it on board. And then you develop the conversation of maybe a bit of knowledge you can give to it to develop the conversation. That was one of the things. I was a physio for 10 years, and that was an important thing when you're diagnosing patients, football players, with the injury they've got, is to actually listen, ask a few poignant questions, but then listen to what the player or the patient is saying to then draw in that conclusion. So, as I said, everyone's unique. We are all totally different. And that's the beauty of the world we live in. And when we talk about being a football manager, for example, you have to treat and you have to deal with so many different people and personalities. And for me, having the ability to sit with somebody and have a conversation and listen to what they're saying, take it on board, be present with them, I think is invaluable. That's something, you know, to emotional intelligence. That's something I've found is important, that somebody wants to feel valued. So to help somebody feel valued is to listen to what they're saying, just investing your time in them to help them. And then maybe there's a few things you can go and do to help them in the situation that they're on in respect to the conversation that you're having.
Most people I've spoken to say that when they reflect, when they listen to someone, more often than not, they will have some kind of thought going on in their head, as opposed to just being that kind of blank listening space. You've said you've worked on it. Are you as good at it as you want to be?
Are there room for improvements? Yeah. we have got loads of room for improvement. Yeah, we need to. Because again, my mind works really, really quickly. So understanding yourself is an important thing to help others. I was a physio at Scunthorpe United, so obviously I'd done my coaching qualifications, but I realised when I was the physio there for 10 years that players would come in with all sorts of problems. So you diagnose them, you assess them, you diagnose them. And a lot of the times it wasn't an injury. There was other things going on, you know, addicted to something or the fear of playing in the stadium or they've got marital problems, things like that. So again, everyone's unique there. So I went and did a diploma in sports psychology for that reason. I said, I need to understand more. I'm a bit like a council worker here, so I need to understand more the psychology of it. So I'm an avid reader. I read a lot of things, as I say, always learning. And I went and did a diploma in sports psychology at Newcastle University. And again, one of the things I learned from that was to be able to reframe. I think people use the word reset a lot now. But when you feel as though, yeah, you are going, I've got like a little trigger that I use for myself to go, no, snap out of that and go back into the way I want to go and be, that negative thought. And one thing I've got into now as well as a lot is journaling. And that's very, very good, I find, where you can actually, if it's written down and you can look at it and you can reflect on the day just gone or the week just gone. And then over a period of time, there's some traits that build in there that you find that you're slipping into. Then you have an opportunity moving forward to actually address that. But again, that comes down to being aware of, talking about going from a growth mindset, going into a fixed mindset. Like where you are avoiding challenges or you are giving up too easily. There's a couple of things there that I've found, journaling and being able to reframe.
I agree with you on the journaling front. I've been doing it during lockdown and I referred back to my old notes and I noticed there was a little bit of a whinging trend that I thought, oh, that's interesting. You know, you wouldn't notice it on one entry, but over the course of many, and then that gave me the opportunity to try and address that. So I'm trying to get really into training my brain to really focus on gratitude. And you can literally train your brain in that way. So that's like having a growth mindset about your outlook, your positivity, your gratitude. And you're very good in that area, it seems to me. Is that something you've had to work on?
Probably unconsciously have worked on it. I'm just me. People say, sometimes you say, is it an act that you put on when you do some of the TV interviews or the radio interviews? Andy Crosby, who's been an assistant manager with me for many years and was a player at Scunthorpe United, he got interviewed and somebody asked him that question. He said, no, that's the gaffer. He's like it all the time. That's just him. And I think for me, you just got to live your values every day. You just got to be you. Underlyingly, your values, the standards you have in life, the values, you just got to live them every day.
Have you spent time working out what your values are, or have they always just been immediately obvious to you?
Obviously, you look at different things. And we opened the interview there with just being positive and just being a good guy. You know, I've been married 34 years, two wonderful children. You go through all the different traumas in life of nurturing and bringing a family up. You go through all the injuries that you have in your football career. And you just realise that, you know, my wife was seriously, seriously ill. We're very fortunate. I did a talk once and my opening talk was a picture of a gravestone. And I had the date at the beginning. And the date here, and it's the dash in between the two dates. So it's when you're born and when you die. It's the dash in between. And we've got to make the most of what we've got. I mean, unfortunately, it was a funeral yesterday. My only auntie, she died of the coronavirus. So we were there. And, you know, it's remembering the good times and the stories that you have. I think it's important stories in life. And we've got to keep making stories and we've got to relive them. We've got to keep telling each other them. The good times. You know, the challenging times, how we've got through it, how we've dealt with it, is an important thing to go and do.
And those stories you mentioned, how important is it to get control of those stories and make sure you're telling yourself a story that is positive, that does reflect gratitude and that kind of thing? Because people can easily slip into stories of woe is me, for example.
Yes. Definitely. I mean, again, so we talk about situations in life that we're maybe faced with. So I'm lying in a hospital bed at 23 years of age, having started my football career, making my debut at 17. Obviously, I've been Liverpool to school before that, knocking at Liverpool's team. I make my debut at 17 at Tranmere. But by the age of 23, I'd already broken one finger on cheekbone. I'm lying in a hospital bed thinking, oh, I've just had spinal fusion. And again, the mind's a wonderful thing, or it's a dangerous thing. I've got weird things going through my mind. I think, will I ever walk again? Will I play football again? All these different things. And I'm thinking, what? Okay, this is the situation I've got. What am I going to go and do for the rest of my career. And then you start to plan your transition away from football. You're married, you haven't got kids at the time, but you're married and you're getting yourself in there. Your wife's seriously ill. You know, that was a big moment for all of us, seriously, seriously ill. And then again, it just puts things into perspective of making the most of what we've got. We have 10,080 minutes in the week. How can we utilize them? Let's not slip it away and just think, oh, what have we gone and done? You know, we just talked about the lockdown period. How have we utilized that time? We could have sat there and thinking, oh, we can't go out, we can't do anything. Or likewise, you think, well, we've actually got time that we wouldn't normally have in the previous way we were living to actually go and do something, go and learn something, learn a language, learn a skill in some description, you know, but to be able to go and exercise more or think about your diet and
listen to podcasts. You've listened to a few, Nige. You've got a few good ones.
I'll be honest with you. Always learn. I've been really, really impressed, Simon. I'll be honest with you. A friend of mine, Dr. John Finn, he's a psychologist and a good guy. And we were talking and he actually recommended one of your podcasts. So from that, I've gone and listened to many, many, and I must say very, very good. Loads of great information to glean from it. But likewise, Jake Humphrey's got some, Jeremy Snape's got some. I've done one, and my son at Stride 25, Nick, they've done several webcasts again. Real good, inspiring people who you can learn lessons from. You know, I know I just probably mentioned the opposition there, but
that's all right.
I don't think you need to worry about that, because at the end of the day, what you do is really good. And
also having a growth mindset, Carol Dweck explained to me, you know, having a growth mindset is everyone trying to raise each other up together. A sign of a fixed mindset is feeling threatened by others. So yeah, I'm sort of trying to be on the lookout for that kind of thing. Another thing that she said as well was how, and I'll come back to your spinal fusion and all that, but just on the growth mindset, something she said is if you have a growth mindset, it will be less important for you to rely on external approval. There's a relationship with intrinsic approval, being the judge of yourself, judging your own character. And you, again, I think personify that. And that was very obvious, for example, when you famously recited that poem in, you know, towards the end of, what was it? The Man in the Glass, isn't it? That's it. Can you just explain, you know, what that means and perhaps then how that might tally with what Carol Dweck said about not needing approval, but being one's own judge?
Yeah. When you get what you want and you struggle for gain, the world makes you king for a day. Just go to the mirror and look yourself and see what the man has to say. It isn't your mother or father or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The man whose verdict counts most in your life is the man staring back in the glass. And he's the one you must satisfy beyond all the rest, because he's with you right up to the end. And you will have passed your most difficult test when the man in the glass is your friend. And for me, it's just be true to yourself. When I was the physio at Scunthorpe United, I'd have players coming into my room having a right whinge of, why are we doing this? What have we got to do this for? God, blaming everybody else. And I put a mirror in the rehab room that we had and that quote. And whenever anybody started having a whinge up, I said, just go and have a look in the mirror, will you? Just go and have a look at yourself. Because at the end of the day, you're the only person you've got to be responsible for. You can't lie to yourself. Look in the mirror and just know that you're doing the right thing and be conscious about it. I had two things. The man in the glass, as I said, is the mirror. And I had another quote up, the man in the arena, because obviously we've got loads of people who are very critical of us. But at the end of the day, when you're performing in that arena with your teammates, you're the ones who know all the things that you've got to go through. But yeah, the man in the glass, Dale Winbrow. So it's something I've used for many, many years. And again, you talk about your values. I've always found it good. So when you brush your teeth every morning, you know, you look at yourself and go, oh, I went to bed too late, or of whatever, you know, or I'm looking forward to doing this today, or I should have done this a little bit better. It's just being true to yourself. I think that's the important thing.
So that does then tie in with having a growth mindset. It's okay, how can I improve, and I will be the judge of my behavior and my own efforts.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I suppose in life, even more so now, we touched on social media before, everyone's got the trying to post a picture of this perfect life. Well, that doesn't exist. You know what I mean? Everyone's trying to be not what they are. Just be, we're all unique. We're all different. Just be you and be you all the time. So you're not going to slip in and out of different of different ways, and you become unhappy by doing that. Just be you all the time, and the only person you need to answer to is yourself, that you're doing the right thing. As I said, touched on it, just be a good person.
Yeah.
Just be a good person.
So before we move on then, just final question on this, what you've just said there leads on to it really is, so being a good person, accepting yourself, right? We're all unique. We all have strengths. We all have flaws. We all have weaknesses. We're all at various stages on various spectrums, if you like. So what is the relationship then between, you know, always wanting to grow and always wanting to improve whilst at the same time accepting where you are right now, flaws and all? Because there's a bit of a paradox there, but they're both important, aren't they?
They are, definitely. Again, you go back to, first of all, you know, if you want to be a leader in life or a family, you've got to look at yourself. So you need to understand who you are, how you will react in certain situations. And, you know, individually, I will react this way or that way. If I'm in a team, we need to understand that this is a weakness I've got, but you've got a strength. So at this moment in time, you become the leader and you lead with that strength, and you understand that I'm weak in this situation and we'll get through this together. But the next situation, you might be the one who's got the strength to lead through this situation, compared to somebody else who might be a bit weaker, and you get through it together. But it's understanding you don't need to be better than anybody else. We're all different. We're all unique, and we all have something to offer at the right time. And it's extracting that potential out of everybody and allowing somebody to flourish. And again, we talk about building teams. It's allowing somebody to flourish at certain times. We all got alpha males, and sometimes they want to dominate all the time. And you've got maybe a young player trying to come up, and we stop him having that ability. So it's making sure that pathway is there to allow him to speak, to allow him to go and flourish.
The former Leicester psychologist, Ken Way. Do you know Ken?
No.
Okay, so Ken Way helped out with the psychology of Leicester in their title-winning season. And something he said to me that he found frustrating was, with young players, they would go above and beyond what the coaches and the manager would ask for them to do as they rose up the ranks. So as they were in the reserves and then perhaps got a spot on the bench. But then once they made it onto, oftentimes they'd make it into the first team. And then he said he found it frustrating that's when they would stop going above and beyond. They would stop doing the extra. So stop trying to improve because they felt like they had made it. Is that something you ever saw in football? And how would you snap someone out of that, you know, in your days as a manager?
Right, being very conscious of this. I think one of the great examples we've got of doing it really well is James Ward-Prowse. Game his debut at 17 at Southampton when we were in the Premier League. He'd been training with us for a couple of years before that with the first team, played in the FA Cup at 16. He had great role models to go and follow. So, for example, Dean Hammond was the club captain, and he could see him every single day, the way he trained, the way he conducted himself. This is the standard that's required. James Ward-Prowse is now the captain of Southampton, and he is a role model for other people. So, for example, when I was at Hull City, we had Seb Larson. And he was, again, exactly the same as Dean Hammond, would do all the right things, had over 100 caps for Sweden. You know, we'd never be late. He'd train properly every single day, do all the right things, live the professional life. And I get to, for young Dan Batty, for example, said, Dan, you in the future are going to replace Seb, but for this year, just watch him, watch the way he trains, watch the way he conducts himself. And Dan Batty's been an ultimate pro. And you're constantly trying to keep the mindset of the younger player. There's a role model. There's somebody who's tread your path or the pathway that you're going on, and look what he's still doing now. He's still working hard. He's still being the ultra professional for this moment in time. And we've done our best at the clubs that we've been at to try and avoid the young player all of a sudden stopping. So, for example, when we joined, I'm trying to be mindful here. We joined one football club. Mm-hmm. The players weren't. They were quite happy to come in late and just leave as soon as finished training. So we had to change the culture. Again, it takes a period of time. And the younger players would come back and train in the afternoon as well and work on the game. Now, there's no coincidence that them younger players now are in the Premier League at the highest level, doing really, really well. Whereas maybe if we'd let them slip through the net and just accept the, I'll come in late and just leave early and not keep working on your game. One of the players, he actually said, oh, this is too hard. I don't want to do this. But he's in the Premier League now and he's scoring and he's doing really, really well. But at that moment in time, it was, oh, this is too hard. And all we were doing is just working on his game. It wasn't hard at all. But in his mind, what he'd been used to, it was too hard. He just had to do a bit more effort, basically. So it's how you nurture and help him through and the way you go and do it and show him. And now they're reaping the rewards of that. You know, I've got so many stories we can talk about, the young players that we had who are now at the top level. But again, we made sure that they kept working on their game and we showed them videos and we sat down with them. I surrounded them with good staff. The thing I'd always say when I go into a football club, I'd say to the players, you are a self-employed businessman. It's your career. What do you want to get from it? It's very short-lived because you might get an injury at any time, right? Hopefully we can extract every ounce of potential from you. I'm going to surround you with the best staff I can find, coaches, nutritionists, physios, strength and conditioning coaches, and see if we can just help you develop. But at the end of the day, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You're the one who's got to go and do it.
And without naming names, of course, but were there some that you just couldn't get into the right mindset?
Yes.
Over the course?
Yeah, there are. And we've talked about that. Maybe sometimes the little mavericks who are talented or were talented when they were younger and everyone kept telling them they were the greatest thing since sliced bread. But then as they moved up, they were all of a sudden moving up a level where the players that they're playing against are as equal, if not better than them. And all of a sudden they just say, oh, this is a bit hard, this. I'm not going to keep improving on my game. I've just got natural talent. You need more than that if you want to get to the very, very top.
Yeah. Yeah, Carol talked about the danger of prodigies, you know, how common that phenomena is. You know, people expecting to cruise along with talent. I always think of the runner, Laura Muir. She wasn't even the best cross-country runner in her primary school, and now she's the best middle-distance runner in Britain, you know, potential Olympic medalist. So you don't need to be that far ahead young, do you?
No, we've all got potential. And again, there's different levels that we develop at, you know, and it's how we can help. Again, as a parent and as a football manager, we have a responsibility and we are accountable for the people that we look after to try and help them develop to the best that they can go and be, to nurture them in a way. Surround, have the environment right, have the culture right, and speak and learn the language that they have as we move with the times. We've got to keep current. That was one of the things I spoke with, you know, we're always trying to learn. You know, I've talked about you want to be a manager for many, many years, what you've got to do. Of course, you've got to win games of football, but you've got to stay current. You've got to stay move with the local trends, and you've got to look after yourself physically as well. So for me, it's trying to find a way that we can help the youngsters develop. And there's talk at the moment where, again, maybe in different sports or over the years, players were spoke to by coaches in different ways or in ways that would now be perceived to, in today's language, to be bullying, where they were just trying to improve people and get on. So it's staying current with the how you speak to people and how you develop young people. We have a moral responsibility to help people. It's not for you. You know, you're not the one who's performing. So it's how we can help the athlete develop, the human being, more importantly, develop into a good human being. So I'd always do with the players that we had, the young apprentices, for example. You're not all going to go and make it into the first team, but you've got to keep your passion to carry on playing football. And can we help you become a good person in life? So when somebody picks the phone up and says, oh, how's Joe? What's he like as a character? You know, you can give him a good reference as a character. So a football manager phoned me up, using an example, in the summer. It was a young player that I had. And he wasn't sure about him as a football player or what he saw on the pitch. I said, he turns up, he trains every single day. His attitude is phenomenal. He'll run all day. He'll listen. He'll want to get better. He'll do everything you want of him. And he's got some ability. He's not got loads of abilities, but he's got some ability. He got transferred for over £20 million and he's playing in the Premier League scoring goals. And it's a joy to see someone like that, because again, it's about the character of the person, and you want to be able to just make sure that you can help when you're looking after a player have the right character as they move forward. We've all got a level of ability and we'll all find our level, but there's things that you can work on that, you know, a please and a thank you. We can all say a please and a thank you, can't we?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
A nice quote from Carol Dweck is, the hand you are dealt is just the starting point for development. And I think, you know, what you're talking there about in terms of, you know, character can always be developed. And obviously that's an individual responsibility. But what you were trying to do then was, what you were successfully doing was creating a culture where that people's character would flourish. And you talked to two things you said just a few minutes ago. One is looking at yourself as a self-employed business person. To what degree then, so question number one is how valuable is it for anyone in any walk of life to look at themselves that way? And then secondly, you talked about helping young players identify a role model that they can base their attitudes, behaviors, and things like that on. Again, how valuable to someone who isn't in sport, to someone listening to this now, would you say identifying a role model that you can think in perhaps difficult times when you're not really in the mood for, I don't know, getting up, doing a workout, doing focused work for 6 hours, 8 hours, whatever it is. How valuable is it to identify a role model to help you through those moments?
I think it is good that there's role models. I think it's good that we can have mentors, somebody to challenge, check and challenge, somebody to ask you the question, on what do you want to go and do? Because at the end of the day, you're the person who's got to get out of bed in the morning and start again. And if there are role models that are out there of people who have gone through the situation that you're going through now, and you can listen to the experience they have had, or importantly, see, I mean, actions speak louder than words at times. And I think if you can see what somebody's gone and done and how they've dealt with the situation, it can give you belief and hope that, well, if they can do it, then I can go and do it. Or it is possible to be done. So for me, role models and mentors are good things. You can have good role models and bad role models. So again, when we talk about building your environments and your culture, I've gone into football clubs where there's been some players and senior players who have not been good role models. And it was difficult to move them on, but we had to change that environment and culture. And then, so for again, when we talk about the younger players having the good role models to go and see, I mean, what does elite look like? Some people don't know what it looks like. So you've got to be able to see them that this is how you do things if you want to get to the very top.
In a football club, it must be, you know, there are hopefully good mentors around. How would you advise someone listening to this, perhaps just working in a, you know, normal office, working from home now because of Zoom, what would you say about finding a good mentor?
I think it's a good thing to go and do. I looked at it several years ago, where I wanted somebody to challenge me in my behaviours. I spoke to a couple of people, but they weren't right for me. We all find our different way. But I think it's good that you've got someone to speak to. Even now we talk about mental health in a way. You need somebody to be able to speak to and give you honest, have an honest conversation with you, which is non-threatening in a way that you're going to get the hump, if you like.
Yeah.
But you need to be challenged. So I'll use an example. When I was at Scunthorpe United, I took over as manager. I made the owner said, "Who do you want?" So I made Andy Crosby, who was the club captain, my assistant, and Ian Barraclough, who was a senior player who I'd played with previously, Wigan Athletic, as the coach. Now, Ian Barraclough's gone on to play, he's now the Northern Ireland manager, and Cros has stayed with me as assistant manager for many, many years. But the very beginning, I said, right, I'm the physio. I've now taken over as manager. You'll be the assistant, Andy. Barry, you'll be the coach. I don't want yes men around me. That's not going to get us anywhere, right? So we need to be successful. What we'll do is we'll get you both qualified and you both have to be managers. In the meantime, we're going to win as many games as we can. What we'll go and do is we'll have a conversation in our room and I'll ask you a question and you've got to tell me honestly, or I'll ask you a question and it's got to be blunt and to the point and an honest conversation. And then when we go out to the rest of the players, we're singing off the same hymn sheet because we've all, you've had a voice, if you like, to talk through it. And not as what's happened in a lot of football clubs over the years, you can see, where members of staff or other all members of staff will go, "Oh, I wouldn't have done it this way," or the talking in the corridors, "I wouldn't have done this way," or "I wouldn't have done that," or "Can't believe he's doing that to you." We have that honest conversation, and I think that's important. So going back to your question, if we can have in all walks of life somebody we can pick the phone up to and speak to, somebody who will listen and somebody who will then challenge you and get you thinking about, okay, well, you know, what I can go and do to do it differently or improve and keep pushing you on without that being fearful of somebody or you shying away from somebody and saying something honest to you. Because unless we have the honest conversation, we can't move on.
Hmm.
You've got
and a lot of places don't have, you know, aren't great at honest conversations, I think. And finding a mentor then, I mean, could it even say someone who is thinking now, I don't know where I would find a mentor where I could speak in a non-judgmental fashion. Could it even be finding a therapist? That could work as a mentor.
Do you know one of the good mentors that we've always had is where you'd go down the pub and have a beer with your mate. And you'd be a mate. So there's the old way of doing it, where you could talk honestly and you're having a beer and he's talking back to you and you're not taking home because he's your mate. He's telling you where to go. But I think it's there are a lot more things out there, places to go, awareness to have. I mean, Strive 25, for example, try and help young 18 to 25-year-old footballers transition from maybe not playing to the next stage of life, the next stage in their footballing career or out of football. So there's a lot more with the internet that we've got now. There are places where you can go to help you have a mentor, basically. Not tell you what to go and do,
yeah,
but to listen and to guide and, as I say, having an honest conversation with somebody who you will be respectful of and not be resentful of or get the hump with in a bad way, I think is good for all of us to have something to share with. Because, again, we touch on the mind, we can be very lonely, we can be on our own, and sometimes you need somebody just to check in with, check in challenge. And we go back to journaling. Well, okay, let's get back on path. Where are we going to go and do? And again, we talk about what's our purpose in life. Why do we get out of bed in the morning and go to work? I do with the players. When we join a new football club, new players come in, I'll sit down with them one-to-one. I think it's important in my office to go and do that one. There's a piece of paper. Just write your name, your address, your contact name, your family, all that. It's amazing how many players can't write properly. even had one player who couldn't write. So he was a young one, but that hadn't been highlighted by anybody before. So just doing that exercise in itself helped him. But I put down, give me five things, five reasons. What's your purpose for getting out of bed in the morning and coming to work?
And that, would that stump players?
Well, I like
some of them.
Yeah, we're having a bit of comfort, but it was kind of like I needed to know why they were getting out of bed in the morning and coming to work. And again, we looked at different things. Well, I want to win something. So again, we're trying to find the character of the player and why he's actually coming in. I want to win something. I want to improve myself. I just want to get the money. I just want the crack with the lads. I had one player who was an international football player at the end of his career. He was getting his last year, if you like. And he said to me, listen, I can see what you're doing. It's great. All the organisation, you're trying to help all the youngsters, this, that, and the other. But for me, all I want to do is just come in, have the bit of banter in the dressing room, have a game of five-a-side and go home. So I knew straight away how I had to think about treating him and looking after him. But likewise, we're having the conversation saying, right, well, but could you be a role model in a way for these younger players when you actually do train?
Was he open to that? Did that open his mind?
He was brilliant. He was brilliant. But again, does that just come about having the conversation? Where I had another player who would just constantly whinge and bicker. And again, I've inherited these players who would just whinge and bicker. And also, and I just go, same sort of thing. What are you coming in for? I'm just coming in for the money. Right, okay. Well, I've got all these young players we're trying to help and develop. It's not my problem. It's your problem. So straight away, it was all negative and just in it for himself. And, you know.
How do you manage someone like that? How do you deal with someone like that?
Well, again, for me, it's sitting down saying, well, look, these are the standards that we're having. And again, just constantly speaking to him. And even on the training ground, just trying to get him to say, maybe influence him to say some positive words around some of the younger players. Or just sit, bring him back in, because we'd video every training session. And I'd sit him down and say, right, just look at this now. Now, see the way you've spoke to this player, this young player, right? Look at his reaction now. How do you think you've made him feel? How do you think he's now starting to act on the way you've dealt with him? And slowly, he was, okay, but it's not my problem. He's got to man up and do a bit more about that. But again, it's kind of nurturing the young players, making him understand, but we've got young players that we need to nurture who everybody's different. Maybe if you'd said that to this player over here, he might react in a total different way. But the way you've spoke to this player has made it hard for him. So again, building relationships, having conversations with people is so, so important.
So not writing someone like that straight off, but just gradually trying to understand where they're coming from and gradually trying to influence them over time to become more of a positive, growth-orientated person.
Yeah, I mean, we inherit players when we go into a football club, and you walk into football clubs at times and there's a total environment or culture that you don't want. So how quickly can you change it around? Unfortunately, in football, you don't get the time that you need to maybe churn something round as quickly as you can. But I think that's an important message. And again, quite often the maverick player, if you like. So I'm always learning. I go and watch games of football and I'll sit in different, well, not the last few weeks, but I'll sit in different parts of the stadium. Me and Andy Crosby are going with sit behind the goal. We're going to watch Liverpool playing out from the back, or Man City playing out from the back, for example. All sorts of different things, or we'll sit in the corner flag, or we'll sit on the halfway line, and we're watching a game and we're going, right, we're just going to go and watch West Brom doing set plays, Man City playing out from the back. And I'm sat there and we're going, right, just look at the technical side of it, great, and Man City playing out from the back, oh it's great the way he's doing that. And then we go, right, now let's just think about it as a supporter's point of view, and we sit and we just go, oh my god, how boring is this, because it's so methodical playing out from the back. The supporters want a bit of action. So it's trying to find that balance on how you want to go and play. It's an entertainment business and supporters want to be entertained. And quite going back to the question there, the maverick player is the one who gets people off the seat, if you like. He's the real entertaining flair player. And he's the one at times is the one who's very, very creative in his mind, but he's only going to do his own thing. He's not going to conform to being on time with everybody else. He's not going to conform to being a team player. So it's how you drag him back in or make him understand. I had one player, and again, I'd show him videos, and we'd have a meeting with all the players, and he wasn't bothered. You know, these are your stats. I'm not bothered. You know, again, we're in a stats-led world now about his running or video of him tracking. I'm not bothered. So again, you're asking the other players, how do you feel? Well, as long as you do the business, then we'll forgive you. He doesn't turn up for training, you know. So you obviously have to discipline in a way. Or he's out in a nightclub till stupid o'clock in the morning, and we've got a training session the next day that he's not going to be able to take part in, or he runs a massive risk of getting injury. So how you control them, but they just go, I'm not bothered. They're the hard ones. They're the ones that are really frustrating.
And you have to get creative. I mean, sir, I was just thinking, Sir Alex Ferguson obviously was the past master at that, in dealing with Eric Cantona, letting him dress how he wanted, do what he wanted, and as a result, managed to get the best out of him. Nigel, there's a couple of the last things I want to chat to you about. I want to chat to you about your videos and some of the key lessons you try to instill there. But I just want to ask you a little bit about the experience you had when you did have your spinal fusion when you were 23 and you were laying in that bed, you know, in a lot of pain for a couple of weeks, thinking, what's the future going to look like? May I even not walk again? That kind of thing. Going through that and that, having that fear of the future and the fear of the unknown, what lessons could you share around that for people who are, because there's a lot of fear right now, who are perhaps unsure of what their future looks like, perhaps in terms of maybe they're potentially going to be made redundant. They don't know what the economic climate's going to look like. I mean, it could go on and on and on. But obviously, you went through that, and now a lot of people are going through that. So what did you learn then that perhaps are some universal ways of, that other people could apply in the way they think now?
Yeah. So 23, I was playing for Wigan Athletic, newly married. Well, not newly married, been married for 2 years, but children will be on the way. I'm lying in a hospital bed having had spinal fusion, L4 and 5 fused together. The surgeon comes in, he says, oh, you'll be all right. I'll just give you back a whiz round now, fused it all together and blah, blah, blah. That was the most excruciating 2 weeks of my life, lying in a hospital bed. You're having to roll me. I'm on all sorts of medication to try and help with the pain relief, trying to roll me from side to side to change the dressing. I'm on this hydraulic bed, and after 2 weeks, I managed to, the hydraulic bed lifts me up, and my feet touch the ground for the first time, to weight bear. Oh, wow. It was excruciating pain. But in that 2 weeks, I'm lying there thinking, right, silly thing, will I walk? Of course I'll walk again. Put that to bed. What am I going to go and do? No one's going to touch me at the top level now, a goalkeeper with a bad back. You know, so how am I going to deal with that situation? Marry, kids, what's my future going to go and be? Now, I'd run a Sunday league team called Renbad Rovers, and I took over
Division 4 of the Birkenhead Sunday League, I hear.
That's it. And we're friends, a guy called Alan Dabner. So Renbad spelled, Dabner spelled backwards is Dabner. So Alan Dabner had been the manager for the youth team. My brothers played in it and basically said, I'm not going to take them into men's football. So I said, okay, well, I'm playing for Tranmere Rovers, right? So I'll coach the team then, because they're my mates anyway. So for 9 or 10 years, I was the manager of Renbad Rovers. So I'm lying in a hospital bed. And as I say, we went from Birkenhead Sunday League Division 4, Division 3, Division 2, Division 1, League and Cup winners, Premier League. And that was unbelievable. When I do talks, I talk about, from management point of view, them 10 years were invaluable experience for me of dealing with players, got all the different tactics, making substitutions, picking teams, all the things that go with it was great. I mean, it's for fun, you know. It's, well, what's the old quote, mate? Your passion, your job, and you never have to work. I just loved it. So I'm lying in my hospital bed thinking, right, what am I going to do? Well, I know. I've got my Sunday league team. I can get them fit. So to do that, I need to get on all the fitness courses I can do to get them fit. I can coach them, so I've got to get my coaching qualifications. And then if they get injured, then I can treat them, because I'd done my FA treatment of injuries course. So I'd got my UEFA license. I'd eventually go and get my degree in physiotherapy, and then I'd get my pro license, and I'd get my diploma in football management as we go down the line. So I'm lying there thinking, what can I do? So I've come up with a master plan to get myself as qualified as possible in all these walks of life that surround the football players, to coach them, to get them fit, to treat them. So I got myself qualified. I showed a massive interest in it. I learned as much as I could. I got myself back playing. The physio had actually left and gone to Everton halfway through my rehab. It took me 3 months to touch my toes. I followed the protocol from the surgeon, but I grafted and grafted and grafted, and I got myself back in the team for the start of the season. So I had the operation in the March, and I got back for the start of the season, and I played every game that year. And it was, you know, get hard work and graft, but that put in place for me the stones for the future. Go and learn. And then when you look further down the line, a couple of years later, my wife was seriously ill. I was doing my degree, part-time degree at Salford University in physiotherapy. 2 years in, we'd had our second child. My wife was taken seriously ill. I made the decision then, I've got to look after the family from that point of view and get through my degree in physiotherapy, because that will give me the job to support the family, wife and two young children. I went to Bangor City as player manager, and we won the League of Wales twice. We played in the European Cup and all that. As I got myself qualified for physiotherapy, and they got my coaching badges, and then I moved to Scunthorpe United as the physiotherapist. So if you like, constant, going back to the, always learning, and you just don't know the situation. I'm lying in my hospital bed. If I hadn't had that time, would I have learned about physiotherapy? Would I have learned about strength and conditioning? Would I have learned about coaching? I would have just maybe carried on just being a football player. And then, as many football players do, oh, my career's finished, now what do I go and do? And then that's where so many people have forgot about what their transition is going to be out of career. They're not qualified. They haven't saved the money. They're in a mess. And that's why so many players end up getting divorced or addicted to something or bankrupt, because they haven't had that routine of coming into work every day, being with a group of players, the camaraderie of the team, and then all of a sudden they're out of a job and they're not doing anything. So
in many ways, what
people, yeah.
In many ways, what you went through then, Nigel, was a blessing, and, you know, led you on the path you've gone down now. So for someone who perhaps, let's just say they've been made redundant, they're sitting there, they're not necessarily in the physical pain you were, but they've got the mental anxiety about the future. What are they going to do? What would your advice be to someone listening to this right now, fearful about what their future looks like?
It's an adventure. We're on an adventure. You know, I said before, we got like the two dates and the dash in between. We're on an adventure. What do you want to go and do? Now, for us to keep developing, to keep growing, we've got to get out of our comfort zone, avoid the terror zone. But it's to improve. It's instead of being fearful, just think of it. It's an adventure. Now, we all need money to pay our bills. Given, right? We all got to find a way. And I go back to the scenario when I was at Wigan Athletic. I'd left Wigan Athletic. Bangor City, we had no money. We had to get a nappy came. We didn't have any nappies. A nappy came through the letterbox for the day before we had a little bit of money. It was unbelievable, right? Health is wealth. And it's how you can just go, right, this is what I want to go and do with the rest of my life. What do you want to go and do? It might be a situation where, right, I've lost my job. You've got a blank piece of paper. Well, what do you want to do? And if you can find something that you can be passionate about, you'll spend more time doing it. You'll improve on doing it. But I know that we've all got to find a way to pay the bills.
Yeah. So find a way to pay the bills and then try not to make a decision from a place of fear. Even though, as we've already established, we're in a very fearful time, news, social media, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. For me, you know, we've got there's 10,080 minutes in the week. We've got a short period of time on this planet. Got to make the most of it. So treat it as an adventure. You know, it's another chapter in the book. That's the way I've looked at it. You know, I've written a book, and it's kind of like, unfortunately, I've lost my job. And again, I can be very, if I wanted to, I could be very bitter about some of the jobs that I've lost. I think I've been harshly dealt with. But that's the reality of it. You've got to get over it. You know, the sooner you can just get over that and then move on. But fear. we can look at it two ways. We can look at it as fear being the worst thing that can go and happen for us, or we're out of our comfort zone and we're on this journey of life. What are we going to go and do? Find a way to be passionate about what you want to go and do, and go and make it happen.
See it as an opportunity.
Yeah. Again, we go to the beginning, challenging opportunities. We're surrounded with opportunities all the time. Maybe you've been in a job that you've not wanted to do, and it's been dead end, and you've been on this cycle of getting up and going to work and hating every minute of it. You've now just been given an opportunity to go, do you know what? I'm just going to go and do something I want to go and do. And that's where it starts with you. And then if you can do that, then you can support your family and everyone can have a smile on their face.
Okay, last couple of bits, Nige. Let's talk then just quickly about some of your rocks. So the rocks that you have in place that you talk about on your Breakfast with Nige videos, and you talk about routines, attitudes, behaviours. I know you get up. In fact, I've got in front of me now Sunday afternoon Scrabble with Mrs. A. So you have your relaxation, your downtime. You have, I know you're a porridge man in the mornings if you've got something busy to do. Otherwise, you're a yogurt with fruit. But what are your rocks that you have in place on any given day to ensure that you have the best possible chance of having a good day that anyone listening could put in place?
A morning routine is important. I think if you can get up to a good start in the day, then you're off to a winner. So having a morning routine, and that comes obviously with having the evening routine, so you get a good night's sleep. But I get up early in the morning. I like to see sunrise most days.
So what time are you up then, Nige?
Me?
Normally.
I'll get up. I don't have any curtains. it's bonkers, isn't it? So when we talk about rocks, I was at Scunthorpe, and I used to say to the players, and they used to think I was a bit, couldn't understand it. But I used to get out of bed in the morning, go to the curtains, pull back the curtains, say, morning well, good to be alive, looking forward to work today. And that one thing set me off on a good thing. Now, I get up in the morning, make the bed, General McChrystal, simple little thing, simple task in the morning, make your bed. Simple, make your bed, have a shower, have a shave, do all that. So personal hygiene is important. And then I'll go downstairs and I've changed my routine at the moment in respect of I go and do my exercise first. So I'll go out for a walk, I see sunrise, it's great, walk and a jog. And then I'll come back and I'll do, because it's the summertime, I'm doing yogurt and fruit. Fruit's so important for us, get our nutrients in there. You know, for example, blueberries help to lower blood pressure, if you like. So all the nutrients in there. In the winter, I'll have my breakfast first and before I go and do my exercise. And I'll have yogurt with the fruit in there. Yogurt helps to lower cholesterol, slow releasing carbohydrates. So when I go on a long walk, I've got energy through the morning. So, for example, when I was working, I'd have porridge in the morning for training. So when we're on the training ground at 11 o'clock, half past 11, I've still got that slow releasing carbohydrate giving me the energy through the course of the morning's training session. As an example, water, hydrate ourselves with water. 60% of the body's made up of water. And then go and do some exercise. Exercise is so important for us. You know, the chemical releases in the body, it gives us, again, mental health is a big thing. So for me, exercise is a big thing. So, but having a morning routine and then doing exercise is important. Again, we listen to some good podcast. Go and listen to Nick Little-Hales. He gives some great information, sports sleep coach.
He's been on the pod, yeah.
Has he?
Yeah.
I went up to Manchester. Again, I always go on courses, CPD courses. I saw him up in Manchester and he blew me away with his presentation. So I took a lot of interest in it. So basically, month I've gone in through lockdown, I said, right, for the next month or 6 weeks, I'm going to go and study sleep, or I'll study high-performing teams, or I'll study leadership, or I'll study nutrition. I've been very lucky that Mikey Naylor, for example, we had at Southampton, I took him to Reading in Sheffield, and he was the England rugby nutritionist as well, an England football nutritionist. Vast amount of experience, just as one person that I know. Our Phil at Muscle to Muscle, again, great for nutrition. Understand the purpose of why you're eating something. We want to stay healthy. And again, I've practiced myself where I haven't ate well and I've noticed how grumpy I am or how weak I feel.
But you've done that intentionally?
Not intentionally. I've done it on purpose. I'm going to experiment with myself. best person to experiment with. So again, with sleep, deprive myself of sleep or have good sleep, deprive myself with the food, have wrong food, have good food, how do I feel? Well, this is how I want to feel. I prefer having good sleep to recovery. I prefer eating good food. So why am I putting this in my body? Why are we doing it? What's the purpose of having this food? So think of food being more for a purpose that fits around your schedule and you. We're all different. Again, highlight it. We're all totally, totally unique. So,
and you use music as well, don't you? See, the thing is, what I noticed about you, Nigel, and the way you approach things is you will literally consciously pick things to eat, activities to do, things to listen to, things to consume, news or whatever, all these things, but consciously choose things that you know are going to help make you feel good. Because I know, for example, that, you know, you're conscious of how music can lift your mood, and you've had, you know, Elvis Day, Neil Diamond Day, I know, at certain clubs. And you like, for example, when you're cooking of an evening, you will put on certain music because you know that it will trigger certain feel-good hormones in you. So it's like you very clearly consciously make decisions about things that will make you feel good.
Yeah, I do. I think it's important. And why not? You know, but feel good at that moment in time. We talk about Scrabble with Angie. Just for a couple of hours, I can just invest in some great time conversation, just one-on-one with Ange, playing Scrabble. You come up with some words, but you're just sitting and talking with each other, you know, with no distractions across. You know, it's wonderful. Because again, relationships are so important. How we develop relationships.
Having even a growth mindset in terms of relationships? I mean, I know that you and Mrs. A are very close, but obviously, you know, so even relationships you can have a growth mindset about, don't you think? You know, I can improve in listening, talking, considering someone else. So that to me is part of the importance of relationships is growing within them.
Yeah. And again, we talked about before being able to sit and listen to somebody. You know, one of the great things as well, you sit around a dinner table. Who would you invite around, you know, six people to sit around a dinner table with? All sorts of different people through history in the world, just to be able to ask them questions. I love asking questions. Ask them a question and listen, and having the time to go and do that. So building relationships. So, for example, when here's an interesting one. So being a football manager, so we were at Scunthorpe for 14 years. Then we moved down to Southampton. We rented down there. Then we rented down in Reading. Then we rented up in Sheffield. And then we left Sheffield and gone, where do we live? This is me and Mrs. A. Where do we live? Do we live, you know, we'd rented our house out in Scunthorpe. The boys are down south. Parents are on, where do we live? So I made a conscious decision to go and say, right, we really enjoyed Hampshire, where we bought a house now. We went and bought a house, but we were still traveling around the country. Now, my wife was working voluntary in the homeless place in Sheffield, and she loved it. And when we were in Reading, she was working voluntary with a charity. We do several charity things. So I've actually gone, it's so unfair on Ange, because I'll get a job and then we'll move to a different part of the country, and I'm all right because I'm in work all the time, and she's got to follow on and set up home, if you like. And then also she's got no friends in that area. She's got to make some new friends. So when we left Sheffield, I said, right, we're going to go and buy a house. We're going to take a year out, and we're going to make some friends. And then after that, I'll then go back to work. It can be anywhere, but at least we've got a home and a base, and you've got some friends then. And I think that was an important thing. Now, I hadn't even moved into the house, and I got offered a real good job in a championship. And I said, you can't go. You've not even had a day, not even slept once in the house yet. So I turned the job down for other reasons besides that as well. But and then all of a sudden I get offered a job up at Hull. And 6 weeks before I get offered the job at Hull, which is a long way from Hampshire, I'd actually gone and sold our house that we'd lived up in there. So I had to go and then move up to Hull, stayed in a hotel for a bit, and then got myself a little bungalow. But life of a manager, right? Going back to it, relationships. So now we've got a nice group of friends, very diverse group, and we can sit down and we can, sometimes in football, everyone just wants to talk football with you. I've got a diverse group of people in the village that we've got. A lot of them are older than us. They're not interested in football, or they hadn't been. And We can just talk about so many different things. And it's great. It's great for your mental health. And it's great just to sit down and talk and listen to people.
Listen, Nigel, I think we've covered a lot. I'm conscious that I could talk to you for ages, but I don't want to hog all your time. So I do want to say thank you very much for coming on. But I'm conscious that you as well, you're a fan of The Art of War, aren't you, by Sun Tzu, the ancient classic about the art of warfare.
Yeah, excellent book. Paddy Mortimer put it on to me. So if Paddy's listening, hope you're well, dude.
Anyway, there's a nice quote that I got myself a copy, and I thought sums it up quite nicely. And in the introduction by Tom Butler Bowden, it says, its author Sun Tzu insisted that wise generals or leaders could not simply rely on the knowledge of the terrain or the capabilities of the opposition, but had to know themselves. To become invincible, they first had to develop deep understanding and full control of their own reactions to be the same in the face of praise or blame. Victory, Sun Tzu says, come to those who've developed an ethic of constant refinement and improvement, which I think sums up pretty much what we've been talking about, wouldn't you say?
I think it's a great quote, you know, knowing yourself, yeah.
Knowing yourself and continual never-ending improvement. Right, and any other final Nigel Adkins words of wisdom on making the most of this adventure that is life and the 10,080 hours we have in a week before I say officially goodbye?
Go make the most of the day.
Perfect. The perfect right. Sign off as per all your videos. Nigel, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. A joy to speak to you.
Nice one. Take care now.
Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed this conversation. For my newsletter called A New Way of Being, head to simonmundy.com.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.